This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Pod Bay Sit and Stay, 82 feet above sea level at Intergalactic K9 Studios. We loosen your leashes, unlatch those cage doors, and distract your handlers to keep the shock collar of statism from being clamped down on your neck. Can you feel it? Is it working? Can you feel it, Phil and Diana?
I think I can feel it. Is it a tingle? Is it some sort of tingle?
Yes. Tingle's a good way to describe it for now. That's how it starts.
Spirit of the Fiends rushing through you.
And as always, the Freedom Fiends is covered by a BitGotNoGovernment license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BitGot. I can't even say it now.
Orgy. It's orgy. Come on.
I know. It gets stuck in my head. So it is. We are here. We are the Freedom Fiends. I am Jeremy. I am joined by Diana and Phil tonight. How are you guys? Diana, it's been a long time.
I know. I've had like various issues for the past, I don't know how long. It just seems like forever. Yep. I'm actually using a friend's computer, which I'm very grateful to have a working fiend phone and everything else going on. So, it's really good to be back, especially with you, Jeremy, because it's definitely been a while.
I know. We switched our schedule to work together, and then things changed and everything, you know.
Yeah. Well, I'll be every other time I do it, it'll be with you on Sunday night.
I know. So. I saw the new schedule. Yeah. I was very excited about that. I was like, yay.
And it's awesome to be working with Phil for the first time.
Yes, indeed. I'm happy to be here with you. I was actually a little worried that you quit, so it's good to see you here.
Nah.
Yeah. She's never going.
Never going to get rid of me. So we are trying something new with the editing of the show. Just want to get this out of the way.
Yes.
Tonight's show will be quieter than usual. Kind of like the volume of other well-produced shows instead of the usual maxed out, and will probably sound a little better. If we like the change and so do the listeners, we'll keep doing this. So let us know if you like it. Obviously this will be, when you hear this, unless you're listening live, you'll be hearing the edited version. So yeah, just let us know if you like it.
Yes.
And we'll keep it up.
Worms.
The notes from the central scrutinizer. He is taking my editing job away from me from the evening because he's going to play. So yeah, we'll see how that goes.
Very nice.
I mean, I don't know. I hope he doesn't change things too much because I've followed his lead on a lot of things, and that's I jack my own show up to insane volumes now. I don't want to have to change what I do because I already have a process. It's already, you know, change. It just bothers me. I don't want to have to deal with that.
Especially when it's thrust upon you.
Exactly. Well, this wouldn't even be thrust. This would be self-imposed, but it would drive me nuts. It would bug me. So. Anyway, so Phil, you had a story you want to start us off with, and some good feelings, right?
Yes, it's good feelings are a very good way to put it. So Patrick Stewart, one of my heroes, one of my absolute favorite actors. As you know, I am a huge Star Trek fan. He uses marijuana every day to treat his arthritis, and I think this is a great voucher for the healing power of cannabis.
Yeah,
I actually don't like the term marijuana. I don't like using that term because it was originally just a slang, but it was originally used in America as a scare term to basically, you know, spark racist fears of weed coming across the border. But
because it sounds like slightly exotic and dangerous,
right?
But doesn't it literally translate to a weed?
Yeah.
Isn't that what it literally translates to, a weed? Not, you know, I thought that's what the translation was from, because it's a word in, you know, they use it's a word in the Mexican language, as far as I'm aware.
Mexican language, right.
Whatever. Yes. That is,
it's it, we don't speak Mexican here, we speak American, Now, we won't be using this term. We'll use the American word weed.
But, or the pots. I like the pots.
Or the pots. Pots. Yes. Are you smoking the pots? But yeah, so Patrick Stewart has been apparently using this for about 2 years to treat his arthritis. He got a doctor's note in L.A., and he hasn't had any side effects, and he hasn't had, apparently it's what,
at least
what got him through Logan.
No undesirable side effects.
Right, yeah.
Right. Random craving for Cheetos, but I mean, come on.
Yeah. Yeah, I did misquote that. It was, I have no negative side effects, so. Right. He probably has plenty of enjoyable side effects, depending. But he's, and actually probably not, because apparently he's usually using the spray and the ointment. And mm-hmm. But he does eat edibles every day at night to go to sleep, which,
wow. You
know, yeah. So I might, my dad has a little bit of arthritis, and he likes to play classical guitar and old country, like the, you know, the good country before they turned it into, like
pop music.
Yeah. Pop music and like music. I will let go of the
Elvis
days.
You're talking about like outlaw country and
stuff. I will forever blame Shania Twain for that.
Well, that's probably.
You don't feel like a woman, Jeremy? Come on.
Not today.
Oh, man. Oh,
that's geez. Only on every other Thursday. Any hoodle. Well, I obviously enjoyed this story, but and I also, as I was saying before, I prefer the term cannabis for the same reason that you described, Phil. But I can also attest to this from a somewhat personal level. I mean, my baby mama, my ex, she has rheumatoid arthritis, and between smoking regular cannabis and vaping CBD oil, she has seen vast improvements in her condition.
Okay.
Over the, you know, many different, you know, pharmaceuticals they had tried pumping into her over the years. You know, she was basically, I don't think she was ever really hooked on them, but she has a very high tolerance for drugs. And she was on like all different painkillers, but that's what she was like living on to get through the day, you know, fentanyl patches and stuff like that.
Oh my God.
And yeah, like from the time I met her, basically. And it has been such a remarkable turnaround. Just by doing that, and wow. You know, unfortunately here in New York, it only just became, they finally decided to say, oh, you know what, you can have this for medical purposes here. And you know, they legalized that I think almost 2 years ago at this point, but they dragged their feet for so long that I don't think the first dispensary was opened until like, you know, sometime last year. Yeah. And they're still making it hard to get, but again, you know, like I said, I've seen her do it. I know a couple other people who have arthritis that use it for the same thing, and I've heard similar stories for years now, and I just, you know, it really can help. It's amazing.
Yeah. It's yeah. Good for what ails ya.
Yeah, and my dad lives in Florida, and they just I believe they just passed medical marijuana in Florida. And
oh yeah,
yeah. So you know that should be helpful. Although I suspect that he'll be a little bit reticent to go that route. But since mm-hmm. since arthritis seems to be, I think, a genetic condition, if I'm still living in Washington State when I get to that age, then you know that'll be good for me. Of course, I think at that point it'll probably be national. And also, I know enough people to get my medicine under the table anyway. So, never yes. mind. It doesn't matter.
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
Oh, where's my phone? I don't have the app ready.
yeah.
Yeah. You'd hope by that many decades down the road that it would be yeah. less of a problem for people to acquire. But you know, you never know. But there's always ways to get it. But
well, they say that the the next generation, the one after the millennials, this is apparently one of the most. I think the claim is that they're the most conservative generation since the greatest generation, or no, since like yeah, the or since the silent generation. That's what I'm thinking. So
wait,
we might be going backwards on that.
Oh no!
Wait, which is I don't even remember what the Silent Generation was.
The Silent Generation was the Nixon generation, I think. It was the one right before the Boomers. So you have the, I believe it goes Greatest Generation, or, you know, World War II generation, to Silent Generation, to the Boomers, to X, to Y, which is the Millennials, to Z, which is the post-millennial.
Post-millennial. I can't keep up with all this stuff. I don't care. People are just insane at every level.
They just keep
getting crazier.
The generation markers are purely, I mean, they're completely bogus. They're just, you know, they're purely for advertisement categorization. So, like, you know, we have, what area can we lump this current current youngins in so that we can most optimally advertise towards them and market towards them? That's really, as I understand it, the source of the whole generation thing anyway.
Well, that would make sense.
Yeah. It does make a lot of sense. I mean, I was just thinking as you were saying that without mentioning any names, the company that I work for, not now working for them, because I've worked for them before and I'm working for them again. It's a whole long story, whatever. I won't get into that. But previously working for them, I'm a data analyst, and I was asked to produce a report that actually lumped people in those categories. Yeah. So I had to create these generational categories based on age and all of that, and asked to produce a report, and it was in order to report to one of our clients at the time, you know, what, you know, where their like how their membership or whatever was spread out, and how to best talk to those people, just like you said.
Right. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's all based on averages, essentially. So, you know, obviously people aren't, people of different generations aren't drastically different, other than, you know, just the averages move one way or another. And, you know, in all of the same things that people say about millennials and, you know, how we're lazy and whatnot, they were saying the same thing about Generation X. They were saying the same thing about the Boomers. And
every successive generation is worse than the previous one. So it's like,
even the.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone proof.
Are you a political activist who does things that the government might not like? Then this free ebook may save your life. Rats is your guide to protecting yourself against snitches, informers, informants, agents provocateur, narcs, finks, and similar vermin. Rats was written by OG libertarian Claire Wolf. Rats is a short book, easy to read, and available free in many formats. Download Rats free at rats-nosnitch.com. That's rats-nosnitch.com.
Well, yeah. Glad I wasn't singing that one. Came back on the air. Not my best voice. I can do better. I really can, I swear.
Prove it. Come on. Let's go.
Okay, now you have
Give us something. Come on.
I'll sing the Meow Kitty Kitty song.
Okay. Perfect.
No, not tonight. All right.
So we're back, and I found this story earlier today, and it just made me laugh. Like, it made me feel bad for these people for a minute, then it just made me laugh. There's a story in the New York Times that there was this show, I guess it was a Scottish show, or at least it was shot in Scotland, mm-hmm. called Alone in the Wild. Or no, what was the name of the show? Eden was the name of the show.
Yeah.
And they basically took a group of 20-something people and stuck them on this, 23 people, and stuck them on this island off of Scotland. And they built walls around everything. So they were literally like warded off from the rest of society. And the whole thing was they were going to
a peninsula, not an island.
Oh, was it? Okay. Yeah. I must have read that wrong. See, there you go. This is what we need you here for, Diana.
Actually, Arnamurchan.
Or something like that. Fact. But so
Arnamurchan. Is that how you pronounce that?
Arnamurchan. Merchum.
I have no idea.
Something like that.
But so, like you're Scottish? Well, no, I'm part Scottish.
No, I'm not.
Oh. Oh.
Anyway, so it's okay.
Oh my God, let's talk about our ancestry now. I'm only kidding. Go ahead.
We could do that if you want, Diane. Anyway, this story, these people they agree to live in this situation, and unlike most Survivor and all these other shows where people are supposed to are trying to win, there was no winners and losers in this. It was set up that people were basically trying to create a society from nothing. So they were left food supplies and building supplies and all these things, and they were supposed to work together and try to see if they could, basically function for a year like that, which to me was interesting right away as soon as I read this, because I've talked about this with a bunch of people about doing a an ANCAP versus ANCOM game game like that.
Yeah.
Where people are forced to they voluntarily choose to, but they go live off in the woods somewhere for a year and basically see which faction actually is more successful after a year.
I'm down with that.
This piqued my interest when I read it, but apparently what happened is things started off strong and immediately went in the tank as far as ratings wise. Mm-hmm. So people started quitting the show. Of the 23, mm-hmm. only 10 were left after a couple of months, because people were just they were freaking out because they were starting to get paranoid. They were starting to worry that bad things could happen to him. There was the midges, the tiny little bugs. The midges, which I remember from, I can't remember what it was, the 97, was the 97 AL championship game, maybe? But the Yankees, they lost to the Indians because they had the darn widgies that just attacked the players, and they couldn't see, and they had a hard time hitting and catching and all that stuff. Anyway.
Oh, wait, okay, so forgive my ignorance. I've never really been great with biology, but what the heck is a midgie?
It's some kind of little gnat type bug, but they're very annoying because they swarm. And they're
black flies or something like that, or
something of that nature, but they're just very small, but they travel in huge swarms, and they're usually by the water and stuff like that, because that was the problem in Cleveland because of being over by the lakes. But anyway, so what happened was a bunch of people quit, and the show just decided to call it quits because the ratings were tanking. But they didn't tell the rest of the people that were left on the peninsula. So these people just emerged in the past couple of weeks, saying, "Hey, we survived!" And they're like, "Oh yeah, by the way, we canceled the show back in August."
Yeah.
What would you do? What would you do if you had just spent all that time?
I don't know. I just some of the things I read though were pretty funny to me. One of the articles that you sent us, they were talking about some of the people that actually remained on there the whole time were having to have their teeth fixed because they'd been eating chicken feed.
They better have at least gotten paid.
Well, I mean, the thing about it is, what happened to your chickens? I mean, were they chickens?
They were stocked with animals.
Did you eat the chickens first before you started eating the feed? And they also had sheep and goats and everything else.
They stocked them up with food supplies, animals, and building supplies. And apparently these people, I guess, maybe were not that adept at figuring these things out.
They must have been terrible farmers.
I want to volunteer to start a society, and I know nothing about any of this kind of stuff. I've been living in, relative comfort and having the government take care of me this whole time. I don't know what to do.
We ate all the chicken. What about the eggs? Eggs?
Oh, eggs. What?
You mean breakfast?
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Are you tired of driving your kids to Gigi Allen's grave only to be unable to find the grave because some dick stole the headstone? Well, there is a solution. The Find Gigi Allen's Grave app for Android will give you door-to-grave directions. The Find Gigi Allen's Grave app uses advanced GPS protocols to guide you with voices to the exact patch of dust and grass where Gigi took his final dirt nap. Bring the kids. Do some needle drops at the Gigiest place on Earth. Gigi always had a huge underground following, but it's even bigger now that he's literally underground. So it's no surprise that lots of folks today take a pilgrimage to Gigi's grave. But getting there wasn't easy. Until this app. Forget Graceland, forget the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Those are plastic places for old people with jobs. Hell, even CBGB's is gone. And that former hallowed ground is now a yuppie coffee bar. The real rock and roll Mecca is an unmarked patch of grass in Littleton, New Hampshire. And our free app will show you how to get there. Get the Find Gigi Allen's Grave app today. Even if you're not planning to go there soon, the app is fun. The Find Gigi Allen's Grave app is covered by the BIPCOT No Government License, and it's from the good people at Beast Lick Internet Policy Commission Outreach Team, who also brought you Fiend Phone, the Freedom Fiends radio app, BIPCOT, Meow Bit, and of course, Truth, Justice, American Way. The Find Gigi Allen's Grave app is free. Get it today on the Google Play Store or on Amazon. Your family will thank you. And don't forget to rate and review. Worms, eating Gigi Allen's face.
So we're back. And we return. Yes. And we were talking about the wonderful people of the game show Eden who got left all alone and
couldn't maintain their chicken stock.
Yes. But we were going to shift from that crappy story to another crappy story that Phil had wanted to discuss, because it strikes a little close to home for you, doesn't it, Phil?
Yeah, it kind of does. In fact, it strikes exactly at home for me. Seattle plant failure dumps millions of gallons of sewage. So
yummy.
Yep. Yeah, thanks, government, for running such a fabulously structured poo plant.
Well, I love what Michael said about it when he sent the article. Without the government, who would dump Phil's neighbor's poo and the putrid sound?
Right. Yeah. So for those of who aren't familiar with this area, the large, back home we would just call it a bayou or a bay, but that's the sound out here is called the Puget Sound. So yeah, that's where apparently I'll just get to the story. So millions of gallons of raw sewage and untreated runoff have poured into the United States' second largest estuary since a massive sewage treatment plant experienced equipment failures that forced it to stop fully treating Seattle's waste. Yum. The county run facility has been hobbling along at about half capacity since February 9th. Electrical failure resulted in catastrophic flooding that damaged an underground network of pumps, motors, electric panels, and other gear. The sewage treatment plant, Washington.
Wouldn't you think that the institution that deals with something like raw sewage would be the most prepared for something like a flood?
Right.
One would think.
Yeah, you'd think. The thing has been broken for almost 2 months now. For about a month and a half.
Yeah.
And, yeah. Well, I'm sure it'll be okay for a while. Nope. Now there is, there are millions of gallons of poop in the local watering hole. I don't know about you guys, but I'm not going to the beach anytime soon.
Yeah, I think I'd have to pass.
Yeah, and everybody's afraid of the Fukushima radiation. I'm not.
Yeah, this might kill you quicker. So
yeah,
you might want to focus.
With the Fukushima radiation and the poop and all that and the Puget Sound now, that's probably where Godzilla is going to come from next.
Oh, man. You had to bring that up.
Well, at least there'll be one positive then. Oh, wait. You wouldn't like that, would you, Phil?
Yeah, that's not going to be good for me. That and you know this is like I think the largest population of Japanese immigrants in America too. So I
coincidence?
Guess it's sort of fitting.
I think not.
Yeah, it's actually really it's really cool when you go into the into certain areas of Seattle, the street signs are actually subtitled in Japanese. It's pretty cool.
Whoa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. At least
and
I think.
And then cool. You have like your you have like tsunami evacuation routes and things like that.
Oh my god. Oh my god. Don't say tsunami after the sewage dumped into the water.
Oh man.
Sorry.
Oh man, you're just bringing all. Maybe
Godzilla,
I need to move back.
Tsunami! Oh my god.
Well, that's one way to fertilize the area,
right? I just moved out here, man.
Poop tsunami.
I just moved out here a few months ago, and now I have to worry about Godzilla, radiation, and poop tsunamis.
There's your show title, Michael.
I know.
Oh jeez,
poor Phil.
Sorry, Phil. Where did you move out there from, by the way?
I moved out here from Richmond. I was living in Richmond, Virginia for a year.
Oh, okay. But, all right.
Yeah, I
like that area a lot. I actually moved out here from the Raleigh area. So.
Oh yeah. Okay. Nice.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. The I went out to Richmond to hang out with the Liberate guys and my buddy Cal out there, mm-hmm. and. I really liked Liberate, and I liked the area to a certain extent, but I didn't really jive with the city too much, so I decided to move on. And I was actually going to decide between Seattle and Denver, and all in all, Seattle came out ahead because I'm a data professional, so this is a huge place for data professionals. Plus it's the tax structure actually comes out a little bit ahead on in the Washington area, assuming you're not living in Seattle proper. So, for me, you know, especially with like income taxes and stuff like that. And plus Colorado has, I think they still have car taxes. They've got income tax and,
oh my God, it's ridiculous. It's just ridiculous. Yeah. The amount of taxes here. It's crazy.
Right. Yeah. But one thing about Colorado, you know, especially Denver being right there in the middle, they don't have to deal with poop tsunamis. So,
that's true.
At least not yet.
There's that.
Oh, but they, but living here, yeah, I am kind of in the middle of sort of ground zero of if there was, you know, something to happen, you know, nuclear wise.
Huh? Oh, you mean like
an
accident, like a nuclear accident?
No.
Living
in Colorado because there's like you have so many military bases and all nuclear facilities and things like that. It's definitely a target. So
right.
I had to look into that when the fears of going to war with Russia were at a height. I was like, oh God, should I leave here?
Oh yeah, but I don't think Russia can target Colorado. I mean, and not unless they finance like terrorism into it. I don't think they can actually get bombs into Colorado. Yeah. I mean, they it's arguable that they would even be able to at least as far as I understand. I mean, I don't really understand their nuclear capability that much, but...
Have you ever seen War Games? I mean, that movie takes place 5 miles from where I live.
Right. Well, yeah, but, I mean, that's a movie.
Yes, but they got everywhere. Come on now. I mean...
Yeah.
Everybody was going to die.
I think I wouldn't be so worried about Russia hitting you guys. I'd be more worried about there being an accidental launch that, you know, messes up from America and that hitting you guys.
Yeah, that's probably more of a concern.
High school hacker gets in, mm-hmm. you know, and just bored playing with the system, starts, you know, thinks he's playing chess with a computer.
Right.
So this would be a natural and man-made disaster segment.
Yeah.
We're all going to die. Don't worry about it, folks.
I know, it's true.
Laugh a little. Yeah. Have some fun.
Poop. poop tsunamis.
That's what we're here for. Exactly. Yeah.
At the very least, as terrible of an experience as a poop tsunami would be, it would be a perfectly entertaining way to go out. I mean, that would be phenomenal as just a joke in life.
Mm-hmm. Well, yes, for, you know, people who actually survive that.
Yeah. Thousands have died due to poop flood.
Oh man. So
this has been a classy segment, guys.
Well, we can go back to the story and try to class it back up if you'd like, right. Phil.
Or we could talk about what we were talking about during the break.
What was that?
Squatting what were we versus sitting.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, nice segue, Diana. So.
Well, at this point out here, I guess it doesn't matter, but.
Yeah, just go wherever you want. Makes no difference at this point.
Going to be up to your ankle soon anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, and I actually live, I don't live in Seattle proper. I live in a town called Renton, which is the it's like the prime commute town. It has a perfect
commute.
So
it's like the bedroom community kind of thing? Like
the, huh? What?
Bedroom community is like, I don't know, sort of like the, like, I don't know. Whatever. Please continue.
That sounds like something that
It's where people like live outside of a metro area. It's basically the suburbs.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Yeah, at first it kind of sounded like the party lines.
Yeah, I know. I wasn't sure where you were going with that.
But Renton is kind of like the perfect commute town to get to Seattle, whether you need to get to Seattle or Bellevue or Redmond, or even if you end up working in Tacoma, which is basically why I picked it. But one issue with Renton that I didn't find out until I moved here is there's a sewage treatment plant in Renton that's right in the middle of downtown, apparently.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so every once in a while, there will be an interesting smell that covers the entire town.
Oh.
But fortunately, it doesn't get into the apartment, so I don't have to deal with it as long as I'm inside. But yeah, I never thought that I would ever move somewhere where there would be this many issues with just poop, you know? So.
Wow.
Like, I mean, what are we back in the Middle Ages? I mean, it's
yeah, or people just dump it out in the middle of the street, like
right. Yeah, I swear it's going to be maybe a week or three before I get the plague. That's going to be the next thing. You know, we had the Ebola scare where like you know, seven people in the entire country got it, and. Now we're going to have the plague rooting from Seattle because of
cholera.
Issues with sewage disposal.
That's what's going to be. It's cholera, yeah.
Yeah. Or typhoid.
Typhoid, yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't be too surprised if typhoid popped up.
Yeah, especially. Right.
Oh man, I can never eat sushi again.
I think you may need to relocate again, Phil.
I might. Oh, man.
With your own sanity.
Sushi.
Yeah, maybe I'll be going to Colorado after all.
Yeah, come get Colorado sushi. It's great.
Yeah. That's one of the biggest draws of this area, too. Seattle's known for having, like, the best sushi in America.
Yeah. Isn't that where, like, that Nobu or something? Isn't that where that got started?
Oh, I
possibly. I don't know. I only remember the one in New York City.
Right.
I know they're everywhere, but.
Right.
All right. Let's not talk so much about poop next segment.
Okay. No poop next segment.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to the Freedom Fiends. On the radio, worms.
Wow.
No.
Yeah, Florida. But we'll talk about that later.
Florida man.
Florida
man. Yeah, we will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so.
So, Marauds.
Oh, yes.
Marauds.
Yeah. So I've got one more story to hit on, and Omaha residents outraged as city returns to gravel roads to save money. City officials say gravel roads are easier and cheaper to maintain. While some may think gravel roads seem like a charming staple of country life, certain residents of Omaha, Nebraska are seriously unhappy about the fact that the city is turning their asphalt streets into dirt and gravel roads, according to the New York Times. Several decades ago, a developer made the decision to save money by paving hundreds of miles of streets on the outskirts of Omaha with asphalt overlay instead of concrete, meaning the roads were never built to city standards. In 2014, to avoid spending millions of dollars fixing potholes and repaving the now deteriorated asphalt roads, the city of Omaha decided to grind the asphalt up into gravel and leave it at that. It's really kind of like living in the country in the city, one resident told the Times. The Public Works Department estimates that it would cost roughly $500 million to upgrade all the substandard streets, according to the Omaha World Herald. Residents who have to deal with the mud and dust getting tracked into their homes say their tax dollars should go toward repaving and maintaining the roads, but the city considers these residential streets the responsibility of nearby property owners. The developer
they've contradicted themselves in this article, I feel like, because first of all, they say to avoid spending millions of dollars fixing potholes, they grind up the asphalt, and then they turn around and say, oh, but that's not our responsibility.
Yeah, absolutely. The developer in the past made the decision to develop the streets as an asphalt overlay, the mayor told the Omaha World Herald. Is it the taxpayer's responsibility today to fix that decision, or would they rather their tax dollars go to the heavily traveled major and secondary streets? For now, the city of Omaha has convened a committee to review the issue and has compromised with some homeowners by splitting the cost of repaving certain roads. So...
Wow.
Yeah. So why, I mean, I understand, like, yeah, it's the community's responsibility to pave their own roads. So, you know, or their own roads. So like you said, why are they grinding it up into gravel for them? You know?
Right. Yeah. It's like, If it's the community's responsibility, I mean, there have been plenty of instances or things that I've read where people have actually gone out and taken it upon themselves to fix potholes.
Absolutely.
You know, in the community.
Yeah, I talked about that on a show a while back. Mm-hmm. I had that happen. Yeah. We had that happen here. There was a guy who got into the papers. I actually think it got out of the area papers. I don't know if it made national news, but it started to get a bigger following because this guy had gotten sick and tired of the fact that my county here, or I think it might have even been the town itself, the township that I live in, they just were, you know, he'd been calling for like a year about this one pothole and they just weren't coming to do anything about it. So he finally went out there and fixed it himself. Mm-hmm. And then they tried to arrest him for it.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
It was like, you know.
Oh, yeah.
But I understand that the whole thing with what they were talking about, the developer deciding to do the asphalt overlay, that's all they do around here in New York because it's a constant, you know, quote unquote, works project where the road has to be repaired every couple of years because it gets annihilated by all the trucks and cars, you know, because there's so many people. I mean, just here in Nassau County alone, there's, I think, well over a million people in this tiny county driving over these roads constantly. So they love that type of stuff because they put that down. It's like, oh, we got jobs forever.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, this really just, you cannot count on the government to give you a good road. I'm sorry.
No.
And this is not just proven here, but it's proven, you know, Richmond has some of the worst roads I've ever seen. And, you know, the roads out, even in Seattle, there are a lot of issues with here, with the roads here. In Portland, Oregon, you have anarchists actually filling potholes themselves because the city won't do it or can't afford to do it. Mm-hmm. So...
I caught that. I saw that story too.
That's awesome.
Self-sufficiency, folks.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, yeah. Don't expect Big Daddy Government to pay for everything for you.
Right. Yeah. Don't expect Big Daddy Government to keep the poop out of your water either.
Right. You had to go back
exactly.
there.
Exactly.
Just saying. I mean.
Thought we had cleared that hurdle, but no.
He,
even if it was a beneficent beast, they're so inefficient they can't afford to do it right anyway. I'm sorry.
Yes. Bad government. Bad government.
Bad government.
Stop it. Stop it right now. All right. We'll be back for the second hour after this trip to the market. Worms.
Special. You're better than those geeky nerds who use Android phones. They think they're so smart. But you're one of the beautiful people who has an iPhone. So the Freedom Fiends moved heaven and earth to make an iPhone app just for you. iPhone users are elite, and the Freedom Fiends know this. And we've handcrafted this artisanal app just for you. It's gorgeous, like you. And like you, it's functional and then some. The app is free, and it's called Freedom Reeducation Camp. Go to iTunes and get Freedom Reeducation Camp today, because you inspire joy feelings in everyone around you. That's Freedom Reeducation Camp. Spend some time today in Freedom Reeducation Camp. That's Freedom Reeducation Camp.
Did that go out?
Yes. Yes, it did.
This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting through the Libertarian Reeducation Center's low orbit ion cannon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. The Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org.
Contagious.
Yay.
It is. So, V actually gave me this great idea on this, since even though I know it's LibPair 2017, I would still pronounce it LibPar 2017. And she told me to spell it pear as in the fruit, LibPair, on my thing. And I've done so. I think it was a good idea.
Yeah, I know plenty of people do that. Because you look at it quickly, it makes sense. It makes sense in your head. LibPar, okay. But,
yeah. Right.
Doesn't par quite fit.
As in golf. Wait.
Right. Lib. I know. I put LibPar, LibPair on something. I don't remember what. I think maybe my Twitter profile. Striving for LibPair, but of course it looks like LibPar.
Of
so maybe
course.
I should do that too.
Liberty Golf 2017.
Hey man, I'm all for that. I like a good round of golf.
I don't. Yeah.
I don't play much. I grew up playing it. My dad was like a huge golfer when I was younger, and like he actually started building golf clubs in our garage. And ended up working for like one of the local golf places and like was, you know, supplying them with stuff. So he built me my first set of clubs when I was 7 years old and taught me how to play. And
I like it as far as, I mean, I like the idea of golf when you're coming from the perspective of, say, like Caddyshack or Happy Gilmore or something like that.
So you don't like golf, you like hockey.
I've actually tried to, and a couple of times successfully hit the ball like Happy Gilmore.
Nice. Sweet. Yeah.
Because I was still playing when that movie came out, so.
Well, it just shouldn't be taken seriously, is all I'm saying.
Well, I don't know. Hey, listen, people make some good money playing that game.
I mean, that's
so
true, but I don't know. I mean, to me, it's fun to do, but watching it is like watching paint.
Oh, no, it's not fun to do. It's horribly excruciating to do. Because it doesn't matter how many times you practice, you never get good at it. You're just like, you're lucky if you get okay. Like it's one of those things that you can practice, and still most people are going to be absolutely like relatively atrocious at it.
But you get to drink and ride around in a cart.
Well, that's what I was going to say. If you can get good at it, you know, if you can get millions of dollars for hanging out for a weekend and, you know, you don't get to use carts in the PGA Tour, but, you know, you get to walk around and people cheering for you and you just get to walk around and smack a ball around and wear funny clothes and get paid millions of dollars for it. You know, that's not a bad gig, I think.
Yeah. Well, it's still the NPR of sports, though.
Listen, there's always badminton, all right? So I think
there's always badminton. At least I'm decent at that.
I don't think I've ever played that, actually.
Yeah, the thingy is called a cock shuttle.
Yes, this is true.
A cock shuttle.
And I learned how to play that in elementary school, and we used to laugh every time the teacher said the word. And we'd get yelled at for it. It's not funny. Yes, it is.
It is funny. Come on. It's a cock shuttle. Are you kidding? It's hilarious.
Nothing warped in the mind of the creators of that game, I don't think at all. Nothing at all.
Yeah, I just thought that's what they called it when only male astronauts could go to space.
Ba-dunch.
I told you I don't only do dad jokes.
You misogynist.
That was a good one, though. Like, off the cuff and everything.
Oh, thank you.
I guess I should get better at those since I'm a dad now. I have fallen into it. I don't even realize that I've been called out by other people because like I'm doing it with the kids and I don't even realize and they just look, people just look at me and I'm like, what? They're like, really? Dad jokes? I'm like, well, I am a dad. I can't help it. You know, yeah. I want to try to stay remain young and hip, but you know what? I'm over 40 now. It doesn't really matter anymore.
I give up. Did you hit the big 4-0?
Yeah, apparently.
Oh, dang. Wow. I didn't know you were that old.
Yeah. Hey, listen, I'm a spring chicken next to some of the other hosts around here. Not mentioning any names. Current company or anything.
Yeah. That ain't old. That's not old. 40's not old. You're young.
Yeah. Exactly.
I'm young. We're all young.
We're going to live forever.
That's right. I'm planning on it.
Yeah. Well, if you believe some people, that's true.
In some way, shape, or form.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't necessarily believe in any of that. Like I don't believe the singularity will bring infinite life to humans in any shape or form. Like people say it will, but I don't think it will.
Like Ray Kurzweil.
Yeah. I don't know if that's one of his claims.
Yeah,
but,
the singularity thing I don't think is his thing. Yeah.
Oh, I thought he was big on that. I could have swore he was big. I don't know if it was his he was the one who came up with it or anything, possibly, but I thought that was something that he was about.
Well, he's a transhumanist, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he's very into it. I don't think he created the idea of the singularity or discovered or whatever. But he has been one of the biggest proponents of it.
Yeah.
From what I've seen.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah, okay.
I don't know either.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, the life extension technologies and all that stuff, you know, like human life isn't actually getting longer. It's just we aren't dying as much. You know, like infant mortality is going down and stuff like that. And that's allowing the averages to go up. So the actual human longevity isn't actually expanding. And so the arguments for infinite life for humans post-singularity are either that we will have such great longevity technology that we'll never die, or that we can transfer our brains into microchips or whatever. We'll get so advanced that we can transfer our brains into those microchips, but. The thing is, that's not really how data transfer works. It's not that you're transferring your brain, it's that you're copying your brain. So you're not actually going to continue living. But then that goes into the whole philosophy debate about,
artificial intelligence.
Well, I mean, it goes into the whole, because there's like a theory that you're not actually continuing life, but you're actually going to sleep and being destroyed and recreated by, and you wake up a new person anyway. So, it gets confusing and esoteric, but I'm lost already. Right. Well, the crux of it is, I don't believe that it will achieve infinite life even post singularity, because, at least from that standpoint, you can't transfer your brain. You can only copy your brain, if technology is to that point. So you can clone your brain, but you can't actually transfer your brain so that you yourself are living forever. You're still going to die. Just a copy of you will live forever.
Hmm.
Make sense?
I guess. Yeah, I guess so.
So
I never understood the whole, like I said, I've listened to some of Kurzweil's talks and stuff, and I've just never really understood the whole thing, and it just seemed kind of out there.
I just Googled it, and Kurzweil is apparently the one that did come up with the idea, not so much of the technological singularity, but as the the superintelligent singularity.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I do think that we'll be able to enhance you human ability and things like that. We already do, realistically.
Bionics.
Yeah, but I do believe that bionics and stuff will advance human ability and stuff. And they're
and the area where.
Say what?
Nanorobotics.
Nanorobotics. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right, and I think if one of those, if I'm wrong about one of those areas, it's more likely to be the longevity thing, because there is like my claim doesn't discount the possibility that longevity increases cannot come in the future. That's still very possible. I just think that it's wildly optimistic to think that's coming as quickly as people think it is.
Coming as quickly, and that life can be extended dramatically.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, there's that whole idea of the studies going around about telomeres.
What's that?
The telomeres, they're the kind of the caps at the end of, or the sort of like, yeah, the caps at the end of your DNA strands, those are the telomeres, like as they start to shorten, that's basically what decides like how long you're going to live, I think, along those lines. And that there's some research going on now in, life extension type research about how to keep the telomeres from shortening or to make them longer.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, that would be interesting.
Yeah.
That'd be great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're kind of like, I've heard them described as, the little caps on the ends of shoelaces.
Right.
But that's basically what they are. And you know how those eventually wear.
Crack and
fall
off.
Right.
I used to know that.
Shoelace under starts fraying. It's so horrible. Yeah. I hate that. Especially if it gets pulled out of one of the one of the holes, and then you can't get it, try to put it back in with like a pin or something. It's like, oh, yes. The struggle is real, folks.
It really
first
is.
World problems.
Yeah.
My shoelace is chewed up.
But I mean, that would be great if that was, that could be one of the things that take us to, Star Trek lifespans where people can live, 300 years long, but it remains to be seen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I agree, though. I think the longevity stuff is definitely more a realistic scenario, but again, not as soon as people, because I mean, look how many other things people thought have been coming for years and we're still waiting on, although that's usually government getting in the way.
Yeah, real quick, yeah. I didn't want to be wrong about this, but the telomere is at the end of a chromosome.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Is your child defiant, independent, annoyingly inquisitive? After a long, hard day of following the rules, who wants to deal with troublesome kids? 49% of children suffer from oppositional defiant disorder, or ODD. Symptoms of ODD include independent thought, rampant creativity, and failure to submit to authority. But now there's a solution. The good people at Pilfer can help you with their time-release, once-daily capsule, Compliacin. Your child won't be able to form his own opinions, let alone express them. It maintains your child's ability to go to a state-run school and perform simple tasks around the house. You won't have to worry about parenting, and the school won't have to deal with your kid asking questions. Compliacin. You'll go from this.
Quit telling me what to do!
To this.
Good morning, Mother. I love going to school. And this week we're learning all about how the government is our federal family and they're here to help us.
Compliacin. Talk to your school psychiatrist and ask for it by name.
Yeah, so anyway, we were talking a little bit about being a data professional during the break, and I'm sort of a data professional, but in a different way than Phil's a data professional.
Yeah, data analyst is such a wide encompassing title.
It really, really is. It could be anything. I mean, basically, I'm a reporting analyst. So I use SQL and other tools to pull data, essentially. I don't do a whole lot of analysis. A little bit, but not a whole lot.
Yeah, I have to use SQL a lot. Data analyst is one of those job titles that can.
So that vague. Can
it could be like you could be hired as a data scientist,
right?
And just be called like, a data analyst, like have that as your title.
That's true. Yeah, yeah.
And so a data analyst could be a title that's like $100,000 data scientist job, or it could be a $10 an hour data entry person can also be called a data analyst. So, and that's how it was at Full Sail when I was, I used to work at an old university, but, there would be like, they would call the people they called data analysts were essentially data entry specialists.
Yeah. Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't enter data. I mean, I guess the most you could say that I enter data would be if I add something to a reference table.
Right.
Like manually.
So you do, do you do ETL, extract, transfer, load?
No.
Type stuff? Like, okay. So that'd be like database, or
database administration data. Type stuff.
Well, like transferring data from and transforming it for from different sources that have different structures and stuff.
Right. No, yeah, I don't do that. I'm really glad I don't do that.
Yeah, it sounds like a boring
I get
job.
Really angry at the people that do that and do it wrong.
Right. Yeah,
I have no idea what any of this is, but I'm really glad I don't do any of it. I'm just gonna throw that out there. No idea what you guys are talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe we should.
Maybe we should talk about other stuff.
Yeah, this is probably really boring radio. So,
data this, data that, blah blah blah.
I type words on the computer that make data go somewhere, and I play with numbers a lot. And this is beyond NPR, I think.
Yes,
no, it really is.
We thought NPR was.
So, Trump's war on terror.
Yeah, I guess we're gonna start talking about that.
Our non-interventionist Trump,
the depressing
story, doesn't mean what you think it means.
Yeah, it really doesn't. So, Glenn Greenwald, the guy who broke the Snowden case, that was Greenwald, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. He wrote an article in The Intercept. Trump's war on terror has quickly become as barbaric and savage as he promised. From the start of his presidency, Donald Trump's war on terror has entailed the seemingly indiscriminate slaughter of innocent people in the name of killing terrorists. In other words, Trump has escalated the 16-year-old core premise of America's foreign policy that it has the right to bomb any country in the world where people it regards as terrorists are found, and in doing so, has fulfilled the warped campaign pledges he repeatedly expressed. The most recent atrocity was the killing of as many as 200 Iraqi civilians from U.S. airstrikes this week in Mosul.
That was preceded a few days earlier by the killing of dozens of Syrian citizens in Raqqa province when the U.S. targeted a school where people had taken refuge, which itself was preceded a week earlier by the U.S. destruction of a mosque near Aleppo that also killed dozens. And one of Trump's first military actions was that was what can only be described as a massacre carried out by Navy SEALs, in which 30 Yemenis were killed. Among the children killed was an 8-year-old American girl whose 16-year-old American brother was killed by a drone under Obama.
That's disgusting.
Yeah. In sum, although precise numbers are difficult to obtain, there seems little question that the number of civilians being killed by the U.S. in Iraq and Syria, already quite high under Obama, has increased precipitously during the first 2 months of the Trump administration. Data compiled by the site Air Wars tells the story. The number of civilians killed in Syria and Iraq began increasing in October under Obama, but has now skyrocketed in March under Trump.
With fewer strikes.
More bombs. Yeah,
with fewer airstrikes. Mm-hmm.
Well, they're just getting more efficient, that's all.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll continue with a little bit more of the article after the break.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
And there existed stickers. They used to not exist. Now they exist.
That's funny.
DJ, how do you like the Fiend stickers on our coffee pot?
They're gorgeous.
Yes. What do they say?
State speech is hate speech. And BIPCOT.org.
Yeah, and people can get them by going to freedomfiends.com and clicking on the new link at the top. It says stickers. And there will be more designs. So check back regularly. Catch them all.
Worms.
From the crew sands of Seattle.
To the cruise
of Seattle beaches.
So, we were talking about the Trumpster and his...
Yeah, back to Trump's psychopathy.
Yeah.
So, what's particularly notable is that the number of airstrikes actually decreased in March with a week left, even as civilian deaths rose, strongly suggesting that the U.S. military has become even more reckless about civilian deaths under Trump than it was under Obama.
Yeah, and like we were saying
reckless
before we went to the break. Well, no, they call it reckless. I call it more efficient. You know, they're just getting more efficient at killing civilians. That's all. You got to look at the bright side here, Phil.
Yeah, higher numbers with less cost.
Exactly.
Yeah.
More bang for your buck.
More. that's wrong.
Or he's just, basically implementing terroristic methods because, you know, terrorism generally targets more kind of civilian areas. And so, you know, I don't know.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what it is. I mean, it's terrorism and war crime. I mean, mm-hmm. This is the epitome of the shock and awe doctrine that we heard from Bush back when America was originally going into Iraq, because that whole thing was, you know, we will hit them hard, we will hit them fast, and they won't know what hit them.
And but we're justified because we're America,
right? We're mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, who cares if it's civilians? An increase in civilian
data. Yeah, crack a few
like
eggs.
Us. They're, you know, they're different. They're brown and they speak a funny language.
Oh yeah,
so it's okay.
Of course. Yeah. Well. it's just this is really a completely psychotic method of reasoning. So it's okay to kill civilians because that is the more effective technique. It's this sort of expediency mentality that it's okay to kill innocent people, because it's more effective of a strategy. And that's like, you are completely abandoning ethics and morality for the sake of
utilitarianism for the sake of an eventual outcome. And it's really disgusting to me.
Yeah. I mean, and it should be to everyone. Should be disgusting to everyone, but you know, I don't know. I don't get it. I don't get like how people can see this and think that's a good thing to do. I don't get it at all.
Well, yep. The reason why is because people like that, just like any other soldier throughout history, has had these people dehumanized for them.
Well, yeah.
So
yeah.
They can quite easily just chalk, you know, for the, a lot of people just have, you know, they carry that mentality.
And they're coming to get us. And
well, exactly. Yeah. Well, right. It's fear mongering, but you know, that leads to that where people really believe that these people are, you know, subhuman, you know, whoever it is. It happens to be Muslims,
even at the height of my statism, if I had read something like that, or been made aware of something like that, I would have been, you know, probably very disillusioned and disgusted even then, you know, but it's just like, yeah, I mean, it just seems like so many people are, I don't know, they see it as justified.
I wish I could say that about myself, but I mean, I am one of those people who uttered the phrase, turn the whole place into a parking lot, more than times than I would ever like
or
to remember.
Or a sheet of glass or whatever.
Yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah, everything. Like, I used those terms so many times after 9/11 for years, so I understand that mentality. I used to be that person.
Yeah.
And just not even thinking.
I mean, and I was like that too, but if you started to humanize it, if you did start to add in, you know, an 8-year-old civilian was droned, or you know, like if it became a humanized thing for me, though, in some way, shape, or form, I was able to see it as appalling, you know.
Yeah, right.
But that's what initially when going into Afghanistan, that was one thing I was cool with that, but the whole going into Iraq, I was like, I don't know if I can get on board with that. And that's when I really started to, you know, like post 9/11, like nationalism or whatever started to die away at that point. So,
right. I think that was one of the effects of the rise of visual media, TV media. And this is, TV media is credited as one of the biggest drivers for the end of the Vietnam War, because it was they were bringing cameras in on the ground, and they were showing some of the human aspects of that. And
right.
A lot of the very dehumanizing propaganda that is generally very successful coming out of the state in order to support war was no longer as effective. Of course, you know, they've stepped up their game precipitously, as we have seen, and of course we have things like the, you know, extra scary happenings that certainly drive more sentiment towards pro-war idealism.
Right. Yeah. Like so. The more recent quote unquote terrorist attack in London.
Right.
Yeah. And then they go through London in the middle of the night, grabbing people out of their homes. I don't know. I read a little bit about that, and I mean, it's just I question everything now. When I read things like that, I just go, there's something wrong with this.
Yeah. Well, it's one of those things like, okay, how is this being publicized and why? You know, there's a difference between really criticizing ideas and supporting violent action towards people with those ideas. And a lot of what has gotten Trump elected and gotten a lot of support for this war on terror, which is a completely vacuous title to begin with, has been essentially fear of ideas. And it's a reasonable fear of ideas. You know, I don't I don't want to go too far into this because I would venture into somewhat risque territory, but
ooh, risque.
Right. But I mean, it's really fear that drives us, and that drives all of this behavior, all of the support for these actions. It's like, okay, I understand that fear, but we don't need that fear to turn murderous, you know? I mean, I don't know if that strings together well, but
it definitely does. I mean, we've been saying all along it's fear mongering, and it's using fear to brainwash the mass of people,
right?
In this country as well as across the world, you know. I mean, fear is just used, and it's a successful tool. I mean, it's gotten a lot of things that the powers that be would like to accomplished.
Yeah, it's one of those things that we really need to, when you go into that serious fear mode, we need to train ourselves to sort of step back and recognize, okay, what are the chemicals in my brain doing to my decision making? Mm-hmm. You know, how is this affecting my rational faculties? Is this
fear is the mind killer?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And is this affecting my decision process? Right. And how is it affecting it? And why?
Right.
You know, is that the appropriate?
But most people take back our rationality. Most people take that fear and turn it into aggression in some way, shape, or form.
Right.
I've been saying that, using that phrase a lot. Some way, shape, or form. I need to come up with something different.
But this is so. This article actually, it has a chart here that has, you know, it shows civilian deaths month by month by month, and it goes into, you know, this kind of bumpiness, and then it goes into March, and it's suddenly just like at least two or three times higher than any other month. Mm-hmm. In civilian deaths, it's
and then, yeah, and then the graph right below that shows where the airstrikes have gone down.
Yeah,
went down in March, but yeah.
Yeah, we have like maybe a half to two thirds as many airstrikes and at least twice as many civilian casualties. This isn't insurgents or. Soldiers, you know, it's not insurgents and soldiers that where the deaths are rising so much. It's civilians, and you know, maybe there are increased insurgent deaths as well. I don't know, but is it worth it to double and triple our civilian death toll?
Well, listen, what was it? 500,000? Was it 500,000 kids were worth it in Iraq the first time around?
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Was that Albright?
Madeline Albright? Yes.
That horrible, horrible, horrible woman.
Yes. Yeah.
So, yeah, of course it's worth it for them. They don't. They don't think about that. And like, you know, I could actually imagine a lot of these, you know, gung-ho people in the Defense Department and stuff actually taking that mentality of the efficiency. Hey, we're getting more done with less. But yeah. they don't, because again, most of them have been trained on some level to think less of these people anyway. So what does it matter?
Well, that's how Hiroshima and Nagasaki were justified.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's one of the ways. I mean, it's like... far more civilian casualties than anything else. You know,
I mean, firebombings in Dresden and Tokyo.
And,
mm-hmm.
and you can be getting more done with less, but if the more that you're getting done is in the opposite direction of the way you should be going, then you're not making progress.
Right.
You know,
they're basically creating more terrorists by these actions.
Absolutely. I mean, absolutely. Yeah. They're killing more people's families. How do you think that's going to come? Blowback is a real term.
It doesn't. And it doesn't mean anything to these people. They don't believe it. Actually, it's what they look at blowback like white privilege. Oh, that's BS. That doesn't exist.
Right.
That's just a made up term.
Yeah.
So.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Do you want to make
make money working at home? Join the high-stakes world of selling BIPCOT No Gov merchandise. The BIPCOT No Government License is licensed under the BIPCOT No Government License, which means that you can go to BIPCOT.org, download the high-res logos, and make your own BIPCOT No Government merchandise to sell. The best part is you keep all the profits. And if you send a picture and mail a sample to the good people at BIPCOT.org, they might even help you promote it for free.
As long as you're not a government or a government agent and you don't advocate for any governments in any way.
Help promote liberty, make money, have fun, meet interesting people, be the envy of all your friends. Be the coolest kid at FiendFest Somalia. Laugh at the state while it collapses, all while making and selling your own BIPCOT.org merchandise. What will you design? Get creative. Lots of folks are doing it, but there's always room for more. There are BIPCOT t-shirts, flags, drink cozies, turntable mats, BIPStrong bracelets, BIPCOT stickers, playing cards, and even Glock pistol backplates. You might even get mentioned on the Freedom Fiends. You're still kicking yourself for missing out on the start of Bitcoin. Don't miss out on BIPCOT. Get in on the ground floor now.
Not a guarantee.
Start your new life today at BIPCOT.org. That's BIPCOT.org.
And stop.
Anyhoodle. So, yeah, for the last segment here, we've come back, and I think we're done with the horror of Trump, or at least we're going to try to get away from the horror of Trump.
Which, lighten things up and talk about my home state.
Yes. Right, and we want to hear how Florida man ate some pancakes.
Florida man's back, and we love Florida man. Some
pancakes.
Florida man. Yeah, so I stumbled across this title, and I think actually, this might have actually been found on Drudge, but it just made me laugh, just the title, because it said the guy, you know, the shorter title was like, guy arrested for pancakes. I'm like, what the heck is going on? And from the Orlando Sentinel, Florida man. Oh, geez, my page just, my browser is just not liking Florida man right now. I can't.
I gotcha.
Florida man ate pancakes in the middle of busy street, is facing charges, cops say.
Oh,
so
I haven't even actually seen the film of it till now.
Yeah, so this guy,
or video,
just,
not film. I sound really old.
Dating
I haven't seen
there.
The talkie of it until now.
The talkie. the first line of this article is great. It just says he pulled up a chair to a portable table and poured syrup over the golden pancakes. Like, that's how it started. he wore patterned green pajama pants and fuzzy trim slippers and was set to enjoy breakfast. The only problem, he was in the middle of a busy Central Florida street.
I bet Miss Stephanie Allen, the reporter, just thoroughly enjoyed this.
How could you not?
You know it. I know. Yeah, absolutely. By the way, like anybody listening, do yourself a favor. Go to the Orlando Sentinel website and listen to the police call for this, the call to the dispatcher. It's hilarious. This guy, some idiot's out in the middle of the street and eating pancakes and stopping traffic. And he's got his friend over on the side there just cursing up a storm.
Oh, my gosh. Well, in the article itself, it has I can't think of words right now. Words are hard. I don't know why. But a 911 dispatcher received a call from a man who says, there's a gentleman sitting in the middle of the road with a folding table eating, just sitting in the middle of the road eating with a chair and a folding table.
Well, I mean, it is, you know, you don't necessarily see that every day. So I'm sure it's kind of hard to, you know, think of anything else to say other than he's just eating. Like, it's not registered. It's probably not registering in the guy's head. He's like, I'm seeing it, but I'm not believing what I'm seeing.
Right. And apparently he doesn't live very far from there either.
No, it was like 100 feet or 1,000 feet away, something like that.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah, they went back to that intersection and found a suspect.
Yeah.
Kiaran Thomas, and he's 21, living about 100 miles away.
He lived 100 yards away from happening. Yeah, they said it was a prank, but wasn't he like Facebook streaming it? Wasn't that the other thing? That's how they found him. Yeah. I thought they saw that. Yeah,
they were.
Yeah, or he got, so, yeah, he, yeah, they yeah, videoed him and then put it on Facebook and tagged him. So,
that's yeah. How they get the guy. just imagine that man's life, just the days before that event, just looking out at that street, just thinking to himself deeply, that intersection needs some pancakes. This has to happen.
Oh, goodness. People do amuse me. They infuriate me.
Especially people from Florida.
Yeah.
Well, yes, they're always there to make me feel better.
They're just more amusing. Even, I don't know, even, gosh. It is infuriating, though, when people get hurt. But, yeah. But things like this are amusing, even though I'm sure the people that were trying to get to wherever they were going were very annoyed.
Yeah, and I mean, I can sit here and laugh about it from this side, but of course, mm-hmm. if I was on my way to work or something, I'd probably be cursing him out, considering hitting him, like, and not swerving, just to be like, well, you're in the road, so you deserve it, type thing, you know, so I can understand that.
But. Yeah, maybe it was just, like, he was bored, and he was doing an experiment, just to see, I don't know.
That guy wouldn't have been allowed on a private road to do that, just saying.
Nope. Not my
next thing you know, people will be on the gravel in Omaha eating pancakes.
Oh, you don't want to be eating pancakes on gravel. I mean, if you drop one of those, man, you're not going to be able to recover that.
Yeah, that's there's no mess. 5-second rule going with that one.
Hey, man. Yeah. It adds minerals to your food. Especially with
syrup side down. Yeah.
Add minerals to your food, man. It's healthy. It's good for you.
Mm. Yeah, tar's like always probably a good thing. Although it's sort of a chelating. Isn't that like charcoal?
Oh, I don't even want to think. I'm not going to be able to eat barbecue again. You're starting to talk like that. Get out of here. What is wrong with you?
Worms.